local government urban affairs will come to order, and we'll start with testimony on Senate Bill 321.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Cornelius Bates, and I am the administrator of the Health Division. Senate Bill 321 is required in order to implement the action of the 1971 legislature. The 1971 legislature amended 431-130, I believe, 110, and said that the Health Division shall make the findings under the Health Hazard Annexation Act. Now, that same bill went ahead and instructed Legislative Council to go through and make certain changes in the statutes. Legislative Council did not believe that those instructions were accurate and were properly phrased. Therefore, Legislative Council did not go through and make the changes in Chapter 222, in that latter part of it, which deals with health hazard annexation. So what we had is two conflicting statutes, one saying that the Health Division shall do these things, the second saying that the Board of Health shall. Because annexations always deal eventually with bonding, we couldn't be sure who was supposed to do it. So we've done everything. In the interim, we've done all of these health hazard annexation studies exactly parallel. A petition comes to me, comes to the board to initiate it. We appoint the same people to go and survey it. We appoint the same hearing officer to hear it. We agree on identical findings of facts and conclusions. The reason is that sometime 4 or 5 years from now, some judge is going to say that one of those two was redundant. It wasn't necessary in order to perfect the annexation, but we don't know which one. Senate Bill 321 is designed to carry out the action of the 1971 legislature and put the health hazard annexation in as a function of the Health Division rather than of the Board of Health. This is accomplished by deleting the definition of board, putting in administrator, and putting in the word division. You'll recall that prior to 1971, the word board meant any way you wanted to use it, the appointed board or the ministerial arm. There are two other changes in the bill, however, in addition to these changes. The first occurs on page 9 of the bill, and this allows a local health department or a boundary commission also to initiate a health hazard annexation to a city. Since 1967, the law has said that if there is an area adjacent to a city which has there's something about it that causes a health hazard. Now, this is usually leaking septic tanks, but not always. It could be a bad water supply system. And the city can provide the service to remedy that by extending its sewers or extending its water system, for example. So we get this situation. Here's this city, here's the bomb area. Then, and the two won't get together for some reason. Local jealousies, revolts don't come out right. But where there is a health hazard, they have said originally the Board of Health could investigate and make findings, and if it found that a health hazard existed and that it could be remedied by this city, then it could order the annexation. Now, it gives the local residents in the area to be annexed another option. It says that if they want to, they can propose some other method of solving it. If it's sewer, for example, they can draw plans and send them into DEQ, and if they're satisfactory, they can go ahead and start their own sewer district. While that would not, remember that this law predates the Boundary Commission law, but that is still one of the effective remedies they have. So that's what this concept is about, and it deals with those areas adjacent to cities. Now,
two questions. About how many years do you have?
Well, we got them stacked up faster than we can do them. We've got one in Florence now. The thing has been in the fire for 4 years. We speeded it up starting last April. We finished College Heights over here. Finally, it had hung on entirely too long. This, in part, was due to the problems of the board having to make the decision and the members all having to read the record and everything else. We've got, and I'll get to this in the next bill, there are 21 such areas identified in Lane County alone. Only three of them eligible for this procedure, but that comes up in the other bill because there are only three of those that are adjacent to cities.
Excuse me, you'll touch on why the Boundary Commission on being.
I was going to that, if that responds to your question, gentlemen. At the present time, the only way in which such a health hazard annexation can be initiated is by the city passing a resolution saying we want to take this area, Board of Health or Health Division settle this problem, or by 10 citizens of the area saying, help, we need to force the city to take us. The local health department has no authority to initiate this proceeding, nor does the local boundary commission, if there is one. This bill would allow the boundary commission to initiate the proceeding by making the request, just as 10 citizens can now do it, or the city can now do it. And we believe this would be an addition, a valuable addition to the statute. I must tell you, I've been talking with people from one of the boundary commissions. They have a proposed alternative language for this, which, in my view, tries to do exactly the same thing and is less accurate than the language that's here, and I would urge the committee to look at it carefully. Their intent is great. Don't misunderstand me. They want to make sure that the boundary commission can start the action. I suggest that this language gives the boundary commission the permission to start the action. The other change, which is in the bill, is on page 10. We've had a particular problem. Came up in the Florence annexation. We just had the public hearing on that in the last week. In order to proceed with one of these, there have to be plans drawn for the facilities. The sewer system in this particular case was going to take care of the area. City of Florence said, we don't want to pay for the plans. The local residents said, we don't want to pay for the plans. Now, normally the cities have paid for these. We wound up paying for it, $3,000, general fund dollars. But it had to be done, so we paid for it. This language will allow us to charge the cost of such plans to the district or area making the use of the procedure necessary.
Now, three of the areas you're going to
annex? No. That would be the city and the area. There's no way we could put a differential tax burden on the area itself. The law presently says that it's up to the city to draw those plans to show how they will handle the problem. This would say that in this Florence case, the city of Florence, as it existed after the thing was done, would be responsible for that money, responsible for the cost of those plans. Now, here's another problem that also will come up, and the boundary board people will bring this up. They have drafted it in, an amendment proposal this in such a way that the taxpayers in the area are charged for the survey. Now, that was not our intent, to charge them for the survey. The reason is this. Let's say that you have Eugene, area outside Eugene. Some guy up at Marcola thinks they ought to get together, so he files a petition or gets something started. Eugene doesn't think there's a problem. The area outside doesn't think there's a problem, and the survey shows there's no problem. Under the proposal that the boundary board has, those people outside would have to pay for the whole survey anyway. It's our belief that that is going too far. I agree that the language we've proposed could lead to the belief that the cost of the survey is to be paid by these people. That is not our intention.
By which people?
By either the city or the people to be annexed. We don't believe the cost of the survey should be. That really is an investigative and quasi-judicial procedure that ought to be paid for by the government. The health division, for example. I think that ought to be paid for by the government to avoid the idea that you're being paid by one side or the other to reach a conclusion. So those are the changes that are in the bill. I can report this to you. The Board of Health affirmatively endorses this bill. They want to get out of the health hazard annexation business. The individual members of the board feel excessively burdened with the amount of reading and work and all that's involved in performing these, and have specifically endorsed this bill so that it becomes an administrative responsibility rather than the whole board having to sit and make these decisions.
All of the... you mentioned the $3,000 done in Florence. What portion of that would be because of the survey?
None of it. That was only for the engineering plan.
Down there?
We paid for the survey out of tax dollars.
How much?
Did we keep any time records on that? What did the survey cost at Florence, roughly?
I would say roughly about
$4,000. Of sanitarium time. And
about
$4,000 worth of state employees' time and studies.
On the survey?
On the survey itself.
Oh, well, reading the amount that you're going to be paying this pass is greater than what the district or city and county.
Yes, sir, and that I think is proper. I think that if the government is going to go to people and say, you must annex, you must be formed in this manner, that it's proper that the general taxes pay for it. And this is it is on this basis that the health department or health division, board of health, whatever you call it, has been operating since the bill came into existence. The only reason for this amendment on page 12 to the statute to make sure that those engineering plans are not paid for by general tax dollars. We think that's excessive.
Any other questions? We've got a couple of other witnesses. Mm-hmm. 321. Mr. Mattis? Mr. Mattis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jim Mattis, and I'm an attorney in Eugene. I'm really representing the League of Oregon Cities. Mr. Bateson's references was that my comments relative to suggested language changes related to the boundary boards. That's not true. This is from the League. And I would like to give you this, although the amount of time I had to work on it would not suggest that these ought to be considered to be final drafts, because I'm not very pleased with it either. But in general, the League has no opposition to Senate Bill 321. The only concern is as the language is expressed over on page 9, subsection 1 would give the local health department or the boundary commission the ability to request the division to initiate proceedings, but it seems to stop at that point, and I'm not sure that a request, what logically has to follow from a request if a request is given. And all I have attempted to do, and I think it needs to be worked over also, is to merely add that provision into the existing 222.905 so that either that occurred, or if 10 people in the area, as is the present statute says now, were to request it, then the division shall request the city to initiate the proceedings. It's to try and tie those two provisions together, which I don't think the first one, at least necessarily by law, requires that anything has to happen. And then on section 3, which is my suggestion relative to section 2, the bold print in SB 321 says that the expense of necessary studies and plans and other documents required for consideration of the proposal shall be borne by the district or area. And our assumption was that that could only mean the area to be annexed. And if that was the intent, then we saw, at least as the League was concerned, no relevance to the county's treasury in terms of trying to get the money out of that, at least necessarily. Certainly there could be some relevance to the city's treasury, but since the import of this was focused on the area to be annexed, the suggested language in my subsection 2 would put it on the backs of the people in the area, that you would bill them, and then if it wasn't collected, you could put it on the tax roll, similar to what we do in special districts or cities if there's a default in municipal utilities. Possibly, however, the city, this committee should consider that if this procedure is utilized, that maybe the state really ought to be the one to pick up the tab rather than.
Any questions, Mr. Madden? How do you pronounce your last name?
Nechak.
Lane County Boundary Commission.
That's correct. I'm the staff consultant for the Lane County Local Government Boundary Commission. There are three boundary commissions in the state at the present time in the three metropolitan areas, Portland, Salem, and Lane County. Or the Portland area is four counties, and Salem area is two counties, Lane County is one. Okay. And I'm representing the staff of those three commissions. We are in support of the concept of 321, and the amendments either is proposed by Mr. Mattis, or if some resolution can be made between Mr. Bateson's proposal and that, is, would be fine with us. Our concern is getting these things started. Many times after the commission has had a hearing, we've had two instances where we've had hearings, and then take a lot of maneuvering to go around and find either the 10 or 11 people to get the thing initiated if there's a specific problem, or to go through several city council hearings to get the thing going from that route. The commission does not act frivolously on these things. We usually have adequate testimony from the local health department indicating fairly strongly that a condition endangering public health does exist, and that it seems superfluous to prolong the agony. We can get the thing started immediately and get the thing before the board, and if it doesn't in fact meet the requirements, then that's heard. But our concern is speeding up the process, and this would do it. We are in support of this bill.
Okay. Are you in support of it in the present form?
Well, if it's clear that if the commission initiates it, that the state
the
health
division,
right, and that the state health division will proceed with its hearings, that would be fine.
Any questions? Senator Meeks.
I wonder if you could go through a chain of events on how something like this might occur.
Well, okay, where there are boundary commissions, I could give you the kind of indication. Many times the commission at the present time will have an annexation request before it, which is within a health hazard area, which has been defined in terms of local health department activities. This is not in terms of state law, having had a state health division finding in that area. The local health department will indicate to the commission that a danger does exist, and the commission will review the proposal and try to look at what alternatives are available to it regarding annexation. These are all in relation to annexations to cities, so that's the only alternative available right now. Okay, the commission will hold a hearing, and normally the people will get up and say, we all agree we need sewers, however, we don't want them now, or we can't afford them, or something of that nature. The commission will then make a finding on the specific annexation, which may indicate that the specific request is approved, which may be like one lot out of 50 that are in this problem. Okay, it then may take from 3 to 5 months in order to get the proposal then initiated as a health hazard. So that there's like a delay of 3 to 5 months between the time we already have heard that there's a problem and the point of time at which it can get initiated and start going to the state health division. And this is the delay many times, which is critical. The difficulty is in reviewing on site the alleged failures, which must be done during the winter. And many times we'll like hear the thing like in November, and it'll be May or June before it gets before the state, and then we've already lost a full year right there. So speed is of critical importance to getting this going. And then it goes into the state process, which can take anywhere from, well, Mr. Bateson mentioned 4 years in Florence.
What kind of powers do you have? Let's say that the City Planning Commission doesn't want to annex to an outside area. Do you have the power to force them to do it?
No, the Boundary Commission at the present time holds the final hearing on the after the State Health Division has found that an alleged problem exists, and if they have made that finding, the commission can make the final decision regarding ordering it, but it's after the State Health Division has made those kinds of findings. The city can have either initiated it by resolution, or it could have gone either by initiation of the boundary commission.
Can you require the city of Salem, for example, extend their sewer line to include a certain area that may be a health hazard?
Not
that's the determination of your hearing.
Okay, no. That can only be done in concert with existing city statutes, which means that the State Health Division must make those kinds of findings. Then the commission can order the area annexed. Okay, this is no different essentially on health hazards than it was before the boundary commission. The commission on its own order or own initiation cannot. It has to have done it as a result of the findings of the state. Okay, in other words, the boundary commission can't go out and say, yes, this area ought to be in the city, ought to be annexed.
The basis of this bill, Mr. Bateson, could intercede between you, the boundary commission, and the city.
He must. There's no option. That's the way the law is right now. He's just allowing the commission to, as all that bill does is add two other, well, not all of it, but one of the provisions is to add two other people to initiate the thing, the boundary commission or the local health division. It can also be initiated by residents within the area. That's in the existing law.
Okay.
Okay. Or by city resolution. So you're adding two initiatory agencies all. It still must go through all the procedure that's already set up by statute.
No, actually, the initiation power is not really much of a power. Any individual.
That's correct. All we're looking at is trying to reduce the time frame during which this thing happens, because many times we lose our winter review season, which is very, very critical to the findings. And this has happened to us three times, twice in our area.
How do you lose those?
Well, like we'll get the request before us for our hearing in November, and then it may be 2 or 3 months before the city will get around to passing a resolution. We've lost the winter water table season for review when the findings have to be substantiated during the winter time.
How would this change that?
Well, if the commission, in November, an example, found that there was a health hazard and decided that that was the most appropriate method to continue the annexation, they could initiate it, say, at the same meeting and get the whole process started with the state at that time.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. There's no other witnesses on SB 321, is that correct?
Excuse me. Yes, Roy Byrne, I signed up for both 321 and 321.
Is there a testify on 321? Before you begin, I'm going to leave, but I want to introduce somebody to the committee. You probably just know that we have an assistant committee clerk. She works part-time, and we keep her so busy that when she wants to find out what's going on in the legislature, she has to come down at her old time to serve the meetings, and that's Connie Blotcher, who blew the bathroom.
I'm Roy Burns. I'm the supervisor of the Water Pollution Control Section of the Lane County Health Department. Part of my responsibility is to develop information relative to health hazard areas within Lane County and to supply it to appropriate state agencies and also to our local elected officials and to the affected cities. I have developed information on both Senate Bill 321 and 322, and I'll supply you with that information after testimony on 322. On 321, we do support the ability of the local health department to initiate action, and we have since 1969, when we attempted to have the same provisions that are now being considered relative to initiation action included at that time. One area of concern to us, although I understand that there is some question about the State Board of Health or some other entity of an appointed board acting as the final entity to make a decision on a health hazard annexation, it's our feeling that to some extent an administrator may be a less desirable final point on the review of health hazard areas in both 321 and 322. Possibly the concept of an appointed commission seems more in keeping with other functions, the way that the state of Oregon is set up with a citizen-led government. To get into specifics of the bill, in Section 5 in Paragraph 1, we would request that there be an amendment so that action would be taken within 60 days of the receipt And on section 7, paragraph 1, that would also read with it.
Does that mean on line 7, change that to 68 instead of 30?
Yes, upon receipt of the certified copy of resolution, that would actually be in line 13.
Mind backing up the burden and laying that one on again. Section 5, paragraph 1, which is amendment 222.870, would recommend what?
Within 60 days of the receipt of the certified copy of the resolution.
What's the present factor?
Variable. It depends upon the workload of the State Health Division staff who are assigned this responsibility. It depends on some extent on the time of year in which the resolution is submitted. It depends a great deal upon whether or not the resolution has been proper and complete when submitted, so it's highly variable.
Well, wouldn't that run contradictory to the previous witness's testimony regarding water table trouble in November? Would you want it faster than that? Or what's your comment on that?
Well, if you're going to, the allegation comes into the place of the health hazard. Let's say the allegation comes in June. You go and do a reconnaissance. You may find it's a health hazard, but you may not, or you may not. It may be that it's a health hazard from November to the 1st of March. So I think putting in a statutory period to go and investigate simply allows places that are health hazards to duck the procedure. They put their request in under a 30-day or a 60-day rule, and they put it in the 1st of June. You can't prove whether they're health hazards or not in the middle of the summer. You can find out in the winter. Now, there are some times the summer survey will be adequate, and that's what we do. We make the survey as quickly as we can. But putting in a time requirement like this will not either make more personnel available, nor will it get the survey done when the hazard conditions exist, in my view.
Mr. Burns, do you have a copy of your requested amendments?
Yes, I do, and I'll submit those after testimony on 3.2. One other area, in section 7, excuse me, in section 12, this deals with the area discussed earlier relative to the amendment that was submitted by Mr. Mattis, I believe. What we're suggesting is that these monies on page 10, line 5, monies to be paid out of pollution control bond monies administered by the Environmental Quality Commission loaned to the respective city or county. On page 10, line 5, says, the expense of which shall be borne by the district or area making use of this procedure necessary to be paid from pollution control bond monies administered by the Environmental Quality Commission loaned to the respective city or county.
Okay, you want to talk why you think that?
I think that, of course, the final net result of most of the health hazard annexations throughout the state of Oregon, certainly those that I'm familiar with in Lane County, the net result is in the development of certain basic facilities, those being sanitary sewers and collection network and possibly treatment plant expansion. The pollution control bond monies, of course, are established for this purpose, or partially for this purpose. The areas where we have had some difficulty in monies four areas have been specifically in the Florence area. That city, like many cities within Lane County, the smaller cities, have very limited monies available to them for engineering work. They have, in fact, no engineering staff on hand within their city, and of course, contract out their work to consultants. Inasmuch as these areas are critical health hazard areas, as documented by either the local health department and or the state health division, it would seem reasonable that pollution control bond money to provide for these basic facilities could be loaned to the area at the rate established, of course, in the administrative practices of the Environmental Quality Commission for this very purpose.
Do you want it as an alternate, or do you want it as an exclusive source of money?
It would be immaterial to me. The alternate would be fine if it's available.
Are there any other questions for Ms. Burns? We can have a copy of your...
Certainly after 322.
Great. Is there any other testimony on Senate Bill 321? Corning, do you have any comments?
This one I can make as I talk on 22.
All right. There are no further testimony on 321. We'll close the hearing on 321 and move to 322. And Corning, why don't you come to that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just one comment on the request that was just made for an amendment regarding pollution bonds. That is a source of funds which could be used, but I would hate to have us draw the plans unless that city had pollution bond money. Not every place that has a health hazard necessarily going to get pollution bond money. So I think that if they were to make such payments out of their general fund, they would find a way to recoup it through the pollution bonds if in fact they did qualify for it. May I ask a question, Mr. Chairman? I couldn't hear the witnesses. Is that sound system working or not?
I think it is. It's
okay.
We're not used to that, Corning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 322 is patterned after Senate Bill 321. The language is drawn directly from it, but it deals with a situation which heretofore has not been met in the state of Oregon. I'm going to use Lane County as an example, and I think my figures, these are the figures that I believe I've been given by them. There are, as I said, some 22 health hazard annexation areas that have been identified, or health hazard areas that have been identified in Lane County, according to information they have given me, where they think there is a health hazard. However, only three of those are adjacent to municipalities where there's anybody that can do the annexing. Over the period of the last 40 or 50 years, we have, through inadequate regulation or inadequate enforcement or a combination of both, allowed areas to build up outside of cities, distant from them, in urban concentrations, and a lot of them go on septic tanks, sometimes badly put in, sometimes on the wrong soil, sometimes under no permit system, for lots of reasons. There's no reason beating the horse now, because it's done. That situation exists. The problem is to solve it. Senate Bill 322 provides a procedure for the formation of a county service district unit in any area which would be eligible for health hazard annexation, except that it doesn't lie adjacent to a city that can annex it. So if you've got just a blob out here, 200, 300, 400 houses on septic tanks, the thing is going sour and you'd have them annexed in a minute if they were adjacent to the city of Eugene, but they're 20 miles out in the sticks, there has to be something that can be done. This bill uses exactly the same procedures and safeguards, the court hearings, the 51% petition, everything that is in 321, the health hazard law, but creates instead a unit of a county service district. Now, a county service district has as its board of directors the local board of commissioners, the county board of commissioners. It has certain fundraising powers. Its powers are not as great as those of cities, but if there is such a district formed, it would stand, in my view, in very good line to get pollution bond, control bond money for instance, or other funds that might be available. But at the present time, there is no way to cause the people in that area to solve the problem, and frequently there is no way for them to solve the problem themselves. So this bill would call for initiation of the proceedings in exactly the way
in which they're called for in 321, and it, excuse me, in, I should say in Chapter 222 in the Health Hazard Annexation Procedures, goes exactly the same way. Now, here is where we have a problem with the Boundary Board. Boundary boards have control over the formation of a service district or any other type of governmental entity. So, when we get, let's say that we have this 322 procedure, and we find an area, it's identified, a health hazard exists. If that area lies within the surveillance area of a boundary board, under the present law, the boundary board could decline to form that district, just say, we don't care, we don't want a blob of government out there, we won't have one. I'm not concerned that boundary boards will do that, but I know that some of the boundary boards are concerned. And I've talked to people, particularly from the Portland area boundary board, about it. If the committee wants to consider that, I would suggest that the way to handle it is this. Allow the boundary board 60 or 90 days or 120 days to consider the order to form a county service district and give them the right to cause some other type of district to be formed if they choose, but if they don't do anything, then the 451 district, county service district unit is formed. Now, county service district can be non-contiguous territory, as you know. So it would be possible to have a given county service district that might have 2 or 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 units that would be involved. The other than that, the language for the formation is taken directly from the present health hazard annexation law. And I've got a list here, it just runs pages, of areas which are potentially in this area. There have been allegations, for example, that these are areas where this statute might be a necessary solution. Every county is involved. I suggest, excuse me, these are multiple copies. I wouldn't want to imply that's one copy. Here's the list. I suggest that this bill is essential if we're going to solve some of the problems that we've already allowed to exist. This isn't really involved with the control of subsurface sewage. It isn't involved with anything but solving the problems that now have, that we've already bought. We have to do something about it. County service district can raise money by fees, it can raise money by bonds, by service fees, by bonds.
Deals?
Yes, with the vote of the people.
Have you ever given any thought to the possibility of revenue bonds in
I think revenue bonds have a real place, and I'd like to see. I don't know for sure the answer to this question. Can a county service district issue revenue bonds now? Do you know that answer? The answer is that they can.
I think they also have special assessment.
Yes, they have assessment and fee financing, and they can also issue revenue bonds. By the way, I want to apologize to the attorney from AOC. I thought that, or from the cities. I had thought he was boundary board, because we were talking boundary board. So they can issue revenue bonds, as well as make assessments, charge hookup fees, charge service fees. And they have the power to issue general obligation bonds with a vote of the people.
They actually cannot issue the revenue bonds without a vote.
I don't believe that any agency can now issue revenue bonds without a vote of the people. However, there's a bill in to try again. I understand the power companies aren't even against it on hospitals. Not specifically on those 22 areas.
How do you determine what a health hazard is?
If the sewage effluent from a septic tank is flowing out onto the ground or into ditches or rivers, we declare that a health hazard exists because
Septic tank effluent can contain fecal coliform, which are by themselves poisonous. They can contain the various pathogens that cause hepatitis, typhoid, and a number of other waterborne diseases. We make the assumption, based on years of study, that the effluent from a septic tank, untreated or only partially treated, is of itself poisonous. We believe that's justified. Now, I cannot say that in a certain place we've got so many cases of hepatitis that are due to this, or so many cases of typhoid that are due to this. But I believe that the dangers are so great that where we've got untreated sewage, or only partially treated sewage, flowing onto the ground or into the waters, that the state can reasonably assume that a serious health hazard exists.
On 322,
Diane, looks like you're back on again. You want to speak to 322? Again, I'm representing the staff of three Metropolitan Area Boundary Commissions. The staffs are certainly in accordance with, and the commissions are deeply concerned about the problems raised and addressed by this bill, and we are in agreement with the concept and the urgency for solving this type of problem. The concerns that we have with it in its present form are that it does not go far enough in terms of alternatives available. Okay, the bill at the present time limits the solution to the creation of a county service district. And alternative options should include the creation of a metropolitan service district, which has a combination of city and county officials, which could be are the elected board of that body, or the creation of a new city. And the reasons I suggest these two alternatives is that in many instances, the problems where you have failing sewage disposal systems are multiple. Generally, you also have problems with water supplies and a number of other things. And any one of these three alternatives could attack the problem. At the present time, where a health hazard exists, the only solution available is an annexation to an existing city. Okay, this bill proposes that a county service district could be created, and what I'm suggesting is that we should have the options where it is most appropriate to create one of those three, which may in fact, it would just give some alternative solutions. Okay. The other problem, which this bill does not get into, and where, and it could without too much difficulty, is that again, mandatory annexation is available only to where an area is contiguous to existing cities. Okay, quite frequently the situation is that you have an area just outside a city, not technically contiguous to it. Obviously, the city may or may not be the eventual area for a solution in terms of annexation. The other situation is that you could have an area adjacent to a county service district that already exists providing sewer service, or you could have a health hazard adjacent to a metropolitan service district or to an existing sanitary district or authority. Mandatory annexations for the solution of existing health problems should be available to those other districts. In other words, you should be able to mandatorily annex to an existing county service district, an existing metropolitan service district, or an existing sanitary district or authority, rather than creating a new county service district. Okay, so what we're talking about is broadening the alternatives available. We're not changing the powers or the definitions or anything else. We're just saying that many times the problem exists in concurrence with other areas, and these solutions would also be logical. The situation Mr. Basin gave about an area being 20 miles out in the sticks is certainly the problem that we've got in Lane County, okay? But there are areas in the Salem metropolitan area where there's existing districts where mandatory annexation would certainly solve the problem and should be available and aren't available to any of us now.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Meeker, why are they not available?
The law provides only for mandatory annexation to the cities, period, where there's a health hazard at the present time. Okay, if it's not adjacent to a city, it just sits there and does its thing.
Sorry, excuse me.
There's no way that you can provide a corridor to
It depends. I mean, I can't give you a flat answer. It may well be that that could be. The situation normally is that at the present time, the State Health Division would have to get that corridor to make the area contiguous to the city. Okay. Generally, we try to look at the logic of the situation. If that's the only way to get at the problem, okay, that's something we'll have to use. But we try to be a lot more direct about it, not only for the people involved, but for the jurisdictions involved. And many times, that's a very expensive kind of solution. And what we're looking at are some logical ways of getting at the problem. And right now, we have one solution.
Excuse me, Diane. I think Senator Burns did that.
Excuse me.
Are there any situations in say, Lane County or the Tumalo where there's a core of a house that has that have all the aspects of the city, but just are not incorporated?
That's correct. Mapleton is a situation like that right now, where there where they are really ready to be a city at the present time. Okay, the creation of the county service district would not really be a logical solution for that particular area. The creation of a city would be a more meaningful solution, primarily because they're really ready for that. And I think that they would have some concern, partly because of the distance from Eugene. You're 45 minutes an hour travel time from Eugene, that the county, where the county seat is, would be their governing body. In other words, we're looking at local control to look at the local solution. The financial resources available, et cetera, would be exactly the same and actually would be better if they were a city rather than a county service district. In other words, you're creating a district that can tax itself almost equally.
Mapleton, just outside of my district.
Okay.
How many people live there?
We were 1,000 or so. 1,000, 1,500. Yeah, maybe 1,000, 1,500. It depends on what, you know, what's Mapleton. It's out there along the river right now, or under the river, depending upon the season. I'm sorry, does that answer your question? Okay. The other possibility is that, and I'm sure Mr. Bateson will be very upset about this. We've talked briefly about it, but
Okay.
After years of the legislature struggling with multi-purpose districts all having their own special formation proceedings and annexation procedures and everything else, in the last session, finally, Chapter 198, the special district law, was created instituted, which consolidates the procedures for establishing districts where everybody goes to the same place to find out how to form or do anything else. Okay, we would hope that the intent, the clarity, the direction, and everything else in this law, rather than going into Chapter 451, could, because it is talking about the creation of a new entity, be incorporated into Chapter 198. Okay, at the present time, Chapter 198 does not provide for any mandatory formations. But certainly that concept can be incorporated without any difficulty. It also would be a logical place to incorporate these other provisions for annexation, since that law also sets up some procedures for annexations. And in other words, the whole thing could be incorporated, I think, without too much difficulty into the existing law and not lose the intent or the direction of the proposed direction of 322 of them. The suggestion Mr. Bateson had regarding the commission's going ahead and considering it, holding the public hearing and deciding whether or not there should be a district, and if they don't act within 120 days, that the courts take over and declare the same form, we would be in agreement with that proposal. We don't see any conflict. We're operating under that right now. And the three existing commissions are all very, very concerned about this problem, and I think we can get our stuff together within 120 days. Okay, there's one financial problem that we've got with this bill, the commission's directly, and that is on page 3, starting with subsection 2 on line 7. It states that the commission, the county court, local board of health, and boundary commission shall cause a certified copy of the resolution. We don't have any problem with that. Okay, together with the proposed time schedule, preliminary plans, and specifications. At the present time, the boundary commissions are not either in an engineering or a financial situation where we could cause these kinds of things to be done as a result of our own action. If the information was available, in other words, if the local health department or staff had already prepared these kinds of things, certainly they could be incorporated and utilized. The problem is that the commission is within their own financial resources, and we're all, like everybody else in this state, operating under a very tight financial resources, and we're all very small staff. We have equivalent of 2 full-time people, and that includes secretaries and draftsmen and everything else, so that there's just no way we could do it on our own with our own financial resources. So that unless it already exists, none of the commissions would be in a position to cause these kinds of activities to be done within the resources we've got. Okay, there have been raised some questions as to whether this is logically the, how should I say, the jurisdiction of the commission. In other words, at the present time, we are really only responding to the logic of the creation of the district or the area it's serving, making sure that the alternatives have been adequately looked at, whether or not the proposals clearly define the problem, et cetera. And we're not in a position of technical expertise in terms of developing plans and specifications, so that there's some question as to whether that logically is a part of our activities. I'm sure that if it was determined that that was the case, we could get something worked out. It would probably be next session before we could really come back with some financial implications, but we have no resources to do this right now. Okay, I would volunteer within my resources to work with Mr. Bates in developing, you know, getting some of these things resolved and his staff if the committee determines that that's a logical direction to go.
All right, thank you, Diane.
Okay, the county service district, metropolitan service district. Now, this is annexations I'm talking about.
Yes,
okay, a sanitary district or authority. Okay, in all of these instances, I'm talking about existing jurisdictions. Okay, I am not suggesting the creation of a sanitary district or authority as the mandatory district because it is a single function district. Okay, so that I'm talking, when I talk about creation of new entities, I'm talking about an MSD, a CSD, or a city.
Well, that's where I run into trouble. Are you suggesting that if we have a sewer problem in South Salem outside the city and it doesn't fit under the present annexation thing, but it's deemed to be a health hazard, that procedure could be initiated to commence the city to solve that problem?
No, it could be one of those alternatives,
well,
whichever is the most logical.
Well, yeah, but the fact is, if one of the alternatives is a city, then you are in fact saying that you can start the wheels going to create a city.
Okay, but I don't know that the creation of a county service district is any more logical in that instance. If we're talking about something close to an existing jurisdiction, and this is, you know, I agree with you, if it's close to Salem and doesn't comply with the contiguity law, that it ought to be annexed to the city of Salem because logically that may be the outfall or something like that. Okay. Another alternative to getting at that kind of a problem, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, is setting up some sort of special, you could have some sort of special revenue district or some sort of special taxing district, which the city would set up and extend services out on an extraterritorial extension of services so that it would be served outside the city, but the city would have the financial resources to pay for or get the money for bankrupting or whatever available to it, and that certainly is another alternative that should be logically looked at. The commissions are all committed to reducing the number of governments where at all possible.
Yeah, I buy
okay.
that. I think that's
okay,
fine.
Now, if we can, that would be another alternative we could look at, see if we couldn't get something worked out. I'm sure Jim Mattis, the league, could help on that particular one.
I'm just trying to soak in the thought that we could mandatorily begin the city, and
I agree. That's why I suggested all these alternatives on the annexation, because
yeah,
you could have the
yeah.
same situation on the other.
Well, help me on the question. Let's suppose we open up the alternatives on mandatory annexation to include sanitary districts.
Mm-hmm.
The battery review or the administrator could cities, but in, say in my case, to a sanitary district, how are the costs allocated and that sort of thing? One of the thing I worry about is on the city, the city picks up part of the cost and the general fund picks up the other part of the cost.
Okay, all the existing districts normally have funds available for this kind of thing, or can tax themselves to do it, or can do it through when the area gets annexed and start installing it. It can, all those costs can be appropriated out against the overall cost. In other words, when you get your bill for your sewer, it can include those engineering costs, plans, and specification costs.
Let me give you a horrible example. I'm knee-deep in effluent.
I believe.
Okay. I live in South Salem, and we were, as a matter of fact, knee-deep in effluent until we annexed the city.
Mm-hmm.
The concern I have is if the annexation is forced to the new or to the existing sanitary district, how are the costs for those who have chosen to stay out and use septic tanks and become needy in their own effluent? How are the costs allocated? Is that pushed off onto the existing sanitary district?
Well, you can, as a result, and are you saying that the area needy in its effluent gets mandatorily annexed? Okay, all costs can be appropriated back to that area when the area gets annexed and the services are put in. In other words, it does not necessarily require that the existing district, they would have to carry them until after the area bills were sent out, et cetera. But those, of course, all can be appropriated against the cost of installing the line on the existing property. In other words, just the way a city does. It may come out of their reserve fund at the present time, but it can be appropriated back to the area that caused the problem and had stayed
out.
Right.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
I know that Mr. Bateson told us or asked us to ignore how we got there. It's very difficult to do that when we talk about these. This is not your problem. But when we talk about these districts that are knee-deep in affluent,
okay,
the way they got there is by proliferation of permits.
Okay, the districts aren't knee-deep in effluent unless it's a water district without sewers. The problem, and that very definitely is a problem, the difficulty is the area didn't have any district there to begin with to solve that problem.
Right, but okay. You will admit, though, that under current law, they can't build a house up there unless they have a permit.
That's correct. Okay, would you like me to go into the problems with the existing state law, which would require a definition of the water table without anybody sitting there putting water into the water table? I mean, all of the standards at the present time are set up on a vacant piece of property, and the standards theoretically can handle some addition of water, but when you start putting a complete development in, then you start running into difficulties. So that you're really looking at two different laws, and I agree with Mr. Bateson, okay, we're really talking about an existing situation trying to get at that, and this is the way to do it. I mean, whatever we come up with, this is a solution, okay. Those other laws regarding the whole parameter, what you're raising in terms of what do you do right now in vacant areas, it comes under a whole new section, and that needs to be dealt with also. I agree with you 100% on that. That is a real problem. But we're really talking about two different directions in terms of solving it. This bill could not do that, but I agree with your concern. I live with that all the time.
Any other questions? Fine. Thank you, Diane.
Chairman, if there are no more witnesses, may I return to the moment?
You're going to be brief?
Very. I can. First place, Senator Meeker, there are not requirements for septic tank permits around the state. There are only 16 of the 36 counties that have them. If Senate Bill 77 passes, I understand, on the floor tomorrow, then there will be a statewide permit system. I think that Ms. Neshek misunderstood me. I have no objection to putting this procedure into Chapter 198, particularly if more types of districts than 451 districts are to be included. I had understood her to say to me she thought the whole thing ought to be done under the existing procedures of Chapter 198, which I think is completely unfeasible. We're talking here about a mandatory rather than a voluntary annexation. I believe that at least for the areas that have boundary commissions, the choice between the various districts is desirable. I fear, however, expanding this bill to allow the Health Division to dictate annexation to a sanitary authority or to a Metropolitan Service District or one of these other units statewide, rather than sticking to the 451 concept. In the Boundary Commission areas, I go along with give the Boundary Commission a choice of the tool it wants to use. But outside of the Boundary Commission areas, I'm a little loath to talk about the deciding which district gets them. Frequently, you'll find the local citizens will solve their problem. If they're faced with that, they'll say, heck, let's join up, as so often has happened here in the Valley area that we've seen.
Yes. Are they all in the Willamette Valley?
No, sir.
Is there a Willamette Valley County that doesn't require permit?
Is there a Valley County that doesn't? Josephine does not. Well, that's not Willamette Valley County. I think there is no Willamette Valley County that does not require permits. But there is an awful lot of state left when you get rid of the Willamette Valley.
Corny, Diane offered to work with you to put in some of her ideas in Senate Bill 322. Obviously, without the majority party here, four votes, we're not in a position to recommend that or not. I think, Dean, I'll ask that you put on a workshop session, and if we ever get the other members here, we can ask them what their choice is. And we may ask you to take Diane up on her offer.
Well, Senator Garson, may I ask this? If we could have made available to us legislative counsel, I think we could be ready with such amendments at the next meeting of the committee for the committee's consideration. But it would take the direction of the committee to make LCC available to us.
And there you do.
Well,
or direction of a member.
As far as the chairman,
yes, I'll take the lead from the president of the Senate to appoint Miriam as a member of the committee, and that gives us four, so why don't we do that? Have it in front of us.
May I ask that you're...
We'll teach him to lead me in charge.
May I ask then that, apparently we've got a little bit of a protocol problem, if someone representing the committee can contact legislative counsel, ask that an attorney be assigned, and ask that that person contact me, then we can get at this. But apparently there's been a protocol change that makes it we can't just walk down there.
We're supposed to have an attorney assigned to the committee. We've doubled the number of legislative counsels for this purpose, and I haven't seen one.
It's much easier, I'd suggest, Dean, if we could sit down around a table with counsel and explain the problem. Thank you. Oh, yeah, I was doing that.
We have your we get to Lane County.
Your idea.
Yeah, sure.
And we have could you outline for me the way, let's say we've got an area out there that's 5 miles from the city.
Mm-hmm.
What are the various ways that they can solve their sewage problem? That there's proliferation of septic systems and they need to do, how do they go about it? What are the options open today without this bill?
Without this bill, they could choose by themselves to form a county service district if the county court agrees with them, because it would take the court's permission to.
But on their initiative?
If they wanted to start it. They could also form a sanitary authority. They could form a sewer district. I'm going to ask for a little help because I'm going to be missing some of these. Diane? So there really there are three. And
now, these bills would add some other alternatives.
No,
they would not. The bill before you, 322, adds simply provides a way that the state can, that
well,
they can be forced
another
to.
Is it not?
But it's the same kind of district. It's a county service district.
But the initiation that comes from another source.
Can come from within or without. Let's say the local people are divided 60-40, 60% of them, the ones that live high on the hill, don't want to form the district because theirs is all flowing downhill.
Okay.
And the 40% in the bottom need it. That 40% can still petition to the Health Division under 322 and say, hey, we need help. These guys at the top of the hill can't do this to us.
Okay.
And that could cause the formation of a county service district unit.
Without a vote?
Without a vote. Both of these are without votes. The whole concept of this annexation is mandatory annexation without a vote. It's a, the state gets, see, this was awful hard fought, as I'm sure you'll remember, the first time it came through, this whole health hazard annexation. It's tough when we tell people what they gotta do.
Any other questions? Okay, Dean will be in touch with you and, with our legislative council. Thank you, Tony. Anybody else on Senate Bill 322? Mr. Burns?
I'd like to make this, brief as possible. Lane County's been referred to a number of times as having a significant problem, and, we do have a significant problem there, and we've studied it and documented it quite well. Senate Bill 322, at least partially, I hope, is, in response to the demonstration of that problem to Mr. Bateson when he, came on board with the State Health Division. We do support, the philosophy and intent of, Senate Bill 322. We did draw up an analysis, and because we're also concerned with the solid waste problem in Lane County, we only made one copy for the committee. It's rather extensive. What it does is gives you some order of magnitude on the problem facing us now. Of the top 10 priority areas within Lane County that are documented here, three of them could be affected by Senate Bill 322 with proper amendments as you're deliberating right now. The program within Lane County has been in existence for quite some time. We have a program that integrates sewage disposal control through a permit process. It also gives development guidance through integrated building inspectors, plumbing inspectors, registered sanitarians, a soil scientist, a registered professional engineer, laboratory staff, data processing. Our personnel share the same office space with the Lane County Planning Department, and there's a parallel review on developments coming through Lane County. Our regulatory program is very sophisticated, highly costly. It's controlled by permits, has subdivision review, and has planning input all along the line. But unfortunately, the subsurface sewage disposal systems, as have been relayed earlier to you, have been found deficient in areas of urban density. Because of this, for over 15 years, we've had a program that analyzed these areas that have been referred to as the 22 areas within Lane County that have problems. They are supplied to you within this packet of information for your review, and in addition, some of the questions that have been brought up about their physical location are shown graphically for you on maps. We have areas both adjacent to the city of Eugene that are mapped that would be the subject of possible annexation acts under Health Hazard Annexation Act under 321, and also we have areas outside of that that could be favorably resolved through provisions of some modifications of 322. One area of concern that has been highlighted earlier is that quite possibly some other form of governmental structure may be the most viable option to providing for resolving this problem. In many instances, the community of Mapleton has been named. We've been working with that community now for almost 5 years, trying to get a city incorporation started in that area because we felt it was the most viable option to their problem. There are at least three other areas where this is the department analysis and recommendation that a city be formed in lieu of some other district. We would also be happy to work with Mr. Bateson in the development of any necessary amendments to Chapter 3 or to Senate Bill 322.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burns. Did you hear that, Mr. Frank? We have that one of our regional through the Lane County Health Department. Is that right, Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Any questions, Mr. Burns? 312/317. The balance of the witnesses here today want to testify on both 317 and 318. Courtney, how do you want to handle it? We want to take 17 first and then 18?
I think 17 or 18 would like to be briefer.
Us take a brief one. 318 then. Senate Bill 318.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, a minor and non-controversial bill. At the present time, the restaurant inspections, which are required by law, are performed by local health officers. And the local health officer receives a permit or an inspection fee of $10 for each of the two inspections that he makes. Now, prior to 1971, licensing and inspection was at the local level. They issued a license, they did the inspections. In some cases, they did the inspections, in many cases, they did not. May I have that list of the percentages? I don't have it with me. Only a few counties have even achieved the 80% level in performing their inspections. But in any event, the 1971 legislature changed the law so that the state issued the license, for which was $7.50 was charged, and then the county went ahead and did the inspections and collected the $10 for the inspections. If somebody doesn't pay his inspection fee, the local health officer gets hold of the state, we go out and collect the $10, average legal fee $100 to collect it, and then give the $10 to the county.
How many times did you do that?
Oh, I signed on about 15 threatened suspensions. Most of them will pay up. Suspensions for failure to pay inspection fees in the last month.
Why is that cost you $100?
Because we have to pay the Attorney General to draw them all up.
$100 to write a letter?
It isn't writing a letter, it's a formal charge. Notice of suspension and notice of a right to a hearing.
And that costs $100?
That's what our average cost is on. It's on the recoveries of these $10.
No, I don't want you
to. You know, average means a lot of things.
Yes,
you
sir.
You have one that's very expensive and some that don't cost
anymore. I'm not aware of any that have cost over about $150 where we've had to go to hearing. But this is the way they have been running for us. And it's an excessive.
What's the minimum cost?
I don't have it broken down on an individual case basis of what the minimum would be. Now, what this bill would do then is to transfer not only the licensing, which is presently in the health division, it would also put the inspections in the health division. As I indicated, at the present time, there are only 8 counties which have achieved 80% of the required inspections. There's one county in which we think the report is mistaken. It shows 10%, but it's Benton County, and their average historically has been better than that. We think it's a typographical error. The counties which have exceeded 80% of performance are Clatsop, Coos, Douglas, Hood River, Marion, Multnomah, Pope, and Washington counties. The others all fall below 80%, though Lincoln is at 79. Now, the proposal that is here before you then is to make uniform these restaurant inspections and to do it by having the licensing done by the state as it now is for a single fee, which includes the license and the inspection fees. The fee section itself is contained in another bill, I believe 3039, originated by the Ways and Means Committee because the Health Division budget is contingent upon that bill. They took 4 different fee increases and put them in as separate bills. The preponderance of the language, which is before you in the bill, deals with simply the change from health officer or duly authorized representative to the word administrator. There are some other changes, however. There is a statute which says that no one who has a communicable disease, and this language is contained in section 10 starting on page 6. No one who has any communicable disease may be employed in a restaurant. Now that has led to simply flagrant violation of the law because there are an awful lot of communicable diseases that can't be communicated through food. There are some, however, that can be communicated through food. We ask here that the division be authorized by statute to make rules defining the diseases which can be communicated through food and then effectively prohibit people who have those diseases from working in restaurants because we don't think they should be working in food processing establishments. We also are asking for authority on page 7 at lines 10 and 11 to deal with cleanliness and grooming of food workers. This is in line with the Equal Rights Amendment. We want hair nets on anybody whose hair is that long, or hair ties, without regard to sex. And also the authority to exclude the general public from the kitchen areas. This has come to be a problem. It's a very real sanitation problem. The bill seems to start all over again on page 8, again with definitions. This deals with the portion of the statute which is involved with commissaries and mobile vending machines. And again goes through making essentially the changes that are involved, moving health, Board of Health, changing the word to division. This is in line with the 71 action, and making change from local health officer to administrator. Starting in section 16 of the bill on page 10, we repeal the section on suspension revocation of licenses. This is a section starting page 10 at line 30, which has long been in the public health laws. It's repeated time and time again. It predates the Administrative Procedures Act and sets up a specific 10-day suspension procedure or revocation procedure for licenses. We think it should be deleted so that all of these licenses are treated just like any other license in the state under the Administrative Procedures Act. So the bill would make the restaurant law applicable to, or make Chapter 183 applicable to the restaurant law, and it would also then repeal these separate sections that deal with the revocation or suspension of permits. There is one amendment which we'd like to ask the committee for. At the present time, ORS 624062, which this bill proposes to repeal, is the section that has the $10 inspection fee in it, which is paid to the counties. However, the licensing year is January 1 to January 1. Since we anticipate having to make a number of inspections between July 1, the proposed effective date of this statute, and January 1, I have an amendment which amends ORS 624062 to keep the $10 inspection fee payable to the health division from July 1 to December 31, and then to repeal that section because the new license fee will cover the $10 inspections. And if I may, I'll hand those amendments up.
Are there any questions for Mr. Bates?
There's one other thing I'd like to add, sir. It is not the intention of the health division to expand its staff in order to perform all of these inspections directly. It is our plan and intention, which I have discussed with the local health officers, I have discussed with the Association of Oregon Counties, to contract with counties for them to perform the inspections with their personnel to the extent that they have sufficient personnel to do it. They will then be reimbursed on a cost basis, a fee-for-service basis. But it will allow the health division to be certain that instead of only 8 counties meeting their requirements, that for these inspections, that we get 100% compliance or the money doesn't flow. We think this will get us more effective restaurant inspection. In addition, the new fee schedule at $35 provides slightly more money in the pot than the present combination of the $750 license plus the two $10 inspections. Put what in the bill, sir? The contract?
The bill contract.
We looked at that possibility. There are several bills in. However, the key division housekeeping bill, 2336, which is awaiting hearing in House, State, and Federal, has the contracting language in it. I don't believe that the contracting language is necessary. I think that even without 2336, we can go right ahead with the contracting. But I am loath to have separate sections, one section dealing with the contracting with restaurants, another one dealing with it on mobile homes, another one dealing with it on tourist facilities, another one dealing with it on another way. I can assure you there'll be contracts.
The only problem that I have is that what happens if, the life of an administrator is sometimes short-lived. I mean, you, for example, your own history, you've been the insurance commissioner, the house commissioner. What happens if somebody else gets the health commissioner in the wheel and the legislature is gone?
One part of the legislature will remain, and that's the emergency board. And this is the absolute control against some administrator going berserk in this manner and trying to gather it all in and do it with state staff.
I'm not so sure, Mr. Bates, that I, as a member of the local government committee, want that emergency board to have that kind of authority either.
May I explain how it is that the emergency board's authority now exists in this field? In order to have state employees, in addition to those authorized in my budget, I must have the specific permission of the emergency board. Now, I have, from my experience watching them over the last near 4 years now, I am convinced that the emergency board would never allow the increase in state employment when there were trained sanitarians ready, willing, and able at the county level to perform the function. So I don't fear, whether it's me or my successor or the next successor, I don't fear any administrator being able to simply cut the counties out of this situation at all. I believe that the whole system forces this contracting, which is the way it ought to be. Now, I would like to see, I want to see 2336 passed with the specific details on the contract. I'm concerned about the possibility of it being slightly divergent, a word being changed here, a word being changed there, but if it's the choice of the committee, I will prepare the amendment for you.
Well, why don't we take a look at what's the number of the bill in the House?
2336, section 8. Section 8 of the bill. There will be one further amendment proposed to that bill, which makes it certain that a local health administrator can't contract with the health division unless he's got his county court's permission. And that's an AOC amendment with which I heartily concur.
Thank you. Any other questions for the statement? Thank you, Mark. All right, further witnesses on 3718, rather. Let's see. Mr. Beyer, do you want to appear at just number here? Do you want to appear?
I'm H.J. Beyer, represent the Oregon Motor Hotel Association. The address is in Portland, 11939 Southeast Stark. Our major concern is the Senate Bill 317, so I'll make just a very brief statement on 318. It only affects a small portion of our membership. This business of centralizing the authority statewide and then contracting it back to the local community is of concern to many of our people. And on this particular bill, quite different from the other one which I'll be testifying on, the increase in the fees is very minimal. I think it only runs somewhere around 30 or 35%. So we can't take too much objection to that, but it's the principle of taking the authority away from the local inspector, centralizing it with the state, and then having the local inspector do the work anyway. It just seems like we're building another layer of bureaucracy there. So those are my comments on this particular bill.
Thank you, Mr. Beyer. Are there questions for Mr. Beyer on this bill? Not, thank you, Mr. Beyer. Anyone else care to testify for or against Senate Bill 318?
According to Chairman, a single comment. I neglected to point out that the regulations for restaurants, which are to be enforced presently by local health officers and sanitarians, are uniform statewide regulations set by rule by the health division. So it's not a matter of varying a set of rules that are being changed. The rules are now uniform and will stay uniform statewide. The enforcement needs to be made uniform.
Any further testimony on 318? If not, we'll close the hearing on 318 and move to Senate Bill 317. And another one of your,
another one of mine.
Mr. Bateson, would you care to join us at the table?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 317, about which there was some discussion at the meeting a week ago last Thursday, similar to Senate Bill 318, moves the licensing of all trailer and recreational facilities to the, including mobile home parks, to the health division. Presently, they also lie for the counties over 10,000. With the local health officers. For the counties under 10,000, they now do lie in the health division. They propose a change in fees, which will make the program closer to being self-supporting, though it will not be self-supporting. They make additional changes, including, primarily, as you go through the bill, the change from health officer to administrator. One of the problems, they also define organizational camp. I handed up some amendments at the last meeting to solve one of the problems that came up in that matter. Now, one of the problems that has come up, and one which I mentioned briefly last time, is one that has two units of concern. I am concerned that there are some kinds of mobile home parks which are really more like subdivisions than they are like mobile home parks. Then, you know, you don't have wheels, you've got these big double wides. They're set in nice locked settings. And if you were to look at them, if you didn't know what it was, there'd be no reason to believe that it wasn't simply a small subdivision. And I think the people who have those subdivisions, those units, have every reason to feel that they are more in the nature of housing, because this is one of the coming things in housing, than they are in the nature of the old mobile home park that needed health and sanitation inspections. I have met with them, and we have tried to work out some definition of mobile home park that will exclude from the ambit of this bill and those like it the ones that are more like subdivisions, but not simply throw away control of the mobile home park generally. And there are good reasons not to, and I'll show you some slides in a moment. There are about 10 of them. We'll show the reason for that. We have not been able to come up with such a definition, partly because mobile homes are defined one way in this law, they're defined another way in the taxing statutes. There are problems with their building construction standards, which are in part under commerce, but are being considered in terms of the Uniform Building Code. I have volunteered, and I mean this very sincerely, to work with them to try to find a definition. Maybe it will be on density, maybe it will be on size of trailer, maybe it will be on term of occupancy. There are many factors. I have met with them, but I don't believe that we can work it out this session. But I will work with them to have such an amendment or such a bill ready for the next legislature. However, because there is at least one bill introduced which would completely delete, it's 836, which would completely delete all control over mobile home parks, I think it's important to make clear to the committee what a mobile home park can be. And for that reason, if I may turn off the lights, I would like to show you a few quick slides of what are legally mobile home parks in the state of Oregon.
836 takes you out of the
836 area. Simply says we get initial plan approval of them, and that's it. Would you get the lights, please? And would you come on the machine? Now, I want to point out that these are all mobile home parks under the present law. We did not pick those that were real nice-looking ones. There are some beauties. This picture is a mobile home park. Notice the spacing of that. Notice how close they are, the area around. Now, that's got the makings of a slum. It isn't a slum yet, but in that kind of packed density, it has the makings of one. Will you show the next picture, please? There is another picture of a mobile home park. That picture was taken because of the black thing in the middle. That happens to be a sewer vent pipe. It's fastened to a 2x4, apparently, that's stuck in the ground. We believe that there's reason to have health control over such places as that. Next slide, please. That is a mobile home in a mobile home park. It is not what the people who proposed 836 or those who opposed 317 are talking about when they say mobile home park. It's not the subdivision, but it's something that I think needs to have some control for health and sanitation. And it is now controlled. Next. How's that for spacing? Next one. That would look like a recreational vehicle park. It is not. That is a mobile home park under Oregon statute. Next. There is another one. I believe that the rules concerning hard surfacing, wiring, plumbing, and all are desirable. Next, please. This is another mobile home park. This is not a recreational vehicle park out in the woods, a forest camp. Next. There's an example of a fire safety problem. Notice the propane tank tipped over. Our rules require that those tanks be secured. Under 836, we would have no right to look at that. Next. Nor with anyone else. There's an example of what can happen with wiring. Now, that pole is well wired. Look at the boxes on it. That's a first-class job of wiring. And then they came with the extension cords. Next, please. This one is not so well wired, but that's in a mobile home park. Next, please. We also desire to continue the control of general sanitation in mobile home parks. I think that gives you a reason why. Next, please. Same statement, general sanitation and the problems that can arise from it. Next, please. That's an illegal water connection. It's below grade. Septic tank effluent, if any were to flood out, could flow right into that and contaminate the water. Next, please. That connection is illegal. Now, that's not a bad-looking park. Look at the lawn. But the law says that the water and sewer connections have to be 10 feet apart. And what you cannot see is that the effluent hose moving in from the left side into that cast T is just stuck in there. It's not sealed in as it should be. Now, if we did not have sanitation control over places like that, we could approve those plans with that cast T, and that's just perfect. And the next guy in just sticks his hose into the T. Any back pressure, and it'll flow out around it or blow the hose out. Next. That's another sewer vent pipe just stuck in the ground. Next, please. This is the final one. That's what happened to the sewer vent pipe when they took the tube before away. Fell down. Thank you very much. Now, I'd like to make it clear to the people who are representing the mobile home industry that I did not attempt to pick representative ones, not at all. And there are some beautiful layouts around. I simply don't think we can come to the definition that will exempt them and still maintain what I believe to be the clear and necessary control of situations such as this. So 317, as I explained it to you at the last meeting, will make for uniform regulation, which we do not now have. We have estimates in, well, let me read you just a survey out of Clackamas County. 85% of these are all mobile home parks, improper and leaking sewage connections, 70% spacing violations, 55% had improper plumbing venting, 30% had wiring violations, 25% had general sanitary violations, 30% had violations on garbage and refuse, 80% of them didn't have plans that they were supposed to have. Just for an example, there's 8 counties. We do not have surveys on all the counties, but we have others which are not dissimilar to that. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I urge you to enact Senate Bill 317 in the form in which it is before you.
Senator Carter. Mr. Rayson, I can see how the administrator of the health division got into mobile home, the trailer camp, and had no reference to home structures that were temporary and all. We're now going through the growing pains of moving the Newberry Terrapin pointed out from the mobile home to the modular home. And the question is when they had wheels on them. Like we get to, you know, when you were here and we're debating the issue of what constitutes a mobile home. My question is this: we're going to come to a time where the health department is stretched out, because for every picture you show here, you show pictures I would think of stick built homes that had bad plumbing, bad electrical, had too crowded, the whole thing. And you're not charged with that responsibility.
That's correct.
So there'll come a time, and we're trying to search for that line where you ought to be out, say, the modular home, except for maybe the septic tanks or.
Oh.
But you're coming in a different direction.
That's for another reason entirely.
Right. So when are we going to reach that point where the definition?
Okay. This is exactly the problem. Let me just give you an idea of some of the things that we tested that didn't work. We said, okay, it ought to be exempt if it has less than 6 spaces per acre. Well, that doesn't quite fit, because one of the nicest I know is much tighter than that. It's Mr. Wilford's. Then we said, well, maybe we ought to exempt it if it is all double wide, that is, say, 16s or more. But that didn't work because, again, Mr. Wilford, who's got one of the very nice parks, allows 8s in there. Sometimes, and there are some very nice old 8s floating around, the 8 wide. Then we talked about the period of tenancy. If the tenancy were for longer than 30 days, it isn't transient, maybe we ought to be out of it. But most of those were not short tenancy. This is the kind of problem that we're getting into, and our problem is one of definition. I think that when we finally get down to it, it's going to be a combination of, it's kind of like the triple two-thirds law, the way that's stated. It's going to be a combination of density, of occupancy, of home size, maybe expressed in square feet, maybe expressed in width. It's, I think we've taken the best run at it we can now. And I don't believe that we're going to be successful in getting one which would meet the criteria that all of us see. We can all look and say, that one's a good one, and that one's a bad one. And if you would just put that in the law and let me decide, that it'd be fine. But you're not about to do that. I'm not going to ask for the authority to do that.
According to, I need to go back a little bit to the fundamentals on this.
Yes, sir.
I've forgotten something that they said last time. What's the problem with the local health officers doing with the county health officers?
They're not doing it. And let me say this in their defense, though. One of the reasons they're not doing it, they're not able to do it, it isn't that they've just chosen not to. It's because they are so badly understaffed with the amount of money that they have available under the existing fee schedule that they can't pay for the personnel to do it. And they've had to take some things and push them aside in order to do things which they viewed as more important. One of the things which Senate Bill 317 will do is to put more money into the system so that we can concentrate on this. We can employ the personnel to do it. And it does this by substantially increasing the fees, though, as I pointed out, it does not increase them sufficiently to pay for the program, even so. Senator Cook made that point at the last hearing.
Now, is it your plan to do all the inspections yourself?
No, sir. As I had explained to Senator Meeker when this matter came up on the restaurant bill, we will contract. I believe that I now have the authority under Chapter 190 to contract with counties, but in what may be an excess of caution, we are specifically asking for it in Section 8 of House Bill 2336, our housekeeping bill.
If the reason they'll be able to do it there is because you're supplying the funds.
We will be able to supply more funds than now exist. We may well be able to work.
We're going to have to pay them for the services.
Yes, sir.
So that's going to be more funds.
Yes, more funds to them.
And but you're going to do some of the inspection yourself, correct?
Well, in seven counties, we now do them. The counties under 10,000 population. Well, eight really, because we contracted one.
The suggestion could be made, and I don't know if it could be made, that you continue that authority for counties under 10,000 where you do it, set up a fee schedule that you supply the funds to those counties that are over 10,000, but not have the authority yourself.
Then,
if it's just a matter of funds.
But we would then have no control over whether or not it was done or whether the money simply went in to be used for anything else that the county governing body thought might be a desirable function or use. I'm sorry to report that that's the case, and it would be lack of uniformity.
You don't think that it's worth pursuing putting forth the effort of trying to work out definitions here?
On the mobile homes, I do think it's worth the effort. I simply give you my estimate that we've already busted our pick on it with the information that we've got available, and I think these gentlemen will concur that I've tried to work with them to find such a definition. I hope you will. We just haven't found it yet. That's the problem.
Is this committee going to be a standing committee?
The theory about that is carried out. I assume that the House Local Government Affairs Committee this will join together in a standing committee. One link on that is they are also elections. We're not. We don't have to work out there. I would think.
That happens. We'd certainly appreciate your support in working out such a definition during the interview.
Yeah, I was going to say, I doubt we'll get it done here. We have a few fish to fry on the list. Throw a pretty good sign and think about cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what?
Cooking.
Okay. Thank you, Cody. We got other people here to testify.
Yes, we do.
Mr. Chairman, gentlemen of the committee, I'm H.J. Byer and represent the Oregon Motor Hotel Association. The Oregon Motor Hotel Association is opposed to 317 for three reasons. It creates another level of bureaucracy, which will contract inspection responsibility to the same officials who are currently conducting the inspections. It will double the number of required inspections, and the fees for the certificate of sanitation are increased at the alarming rate of approximately 500%. So far, the testimony has been aimed at mobile home parks, but this applies equally well to your motels, your motor hotels, resorts, and so on. A 10-unit motel is currently charged $5. Their fee would be increased to $25. A 50-unit motel is now $10. It would be increased to $50. 75-unit motel would jump from $15 to $75. And you get up to, say, a 200-unit motor hotel, where you're talking of a $25 increase to $150. You take these fee increases, and in the instance of a motor hotel that has a restaurant and a lounge, perhaps a swimming pool, you'll see a similar increase in all of these inspection fees. They might have an increase of $125 on their sanitation inspection. On swimming pools, there's a proposed increase from $15 to $25. In your restaurants, it would go up only 30% there, or 35%. But when you add all these together, you're throwing quite a bit of additional expense on the operator, and chances are that when this inspection takes place, there's going to be one man that's going to do them all in most areas. And we think it's just, use an old Navy term, building a rice bowl. It's just creating something else that is not going to serve either the public or the industry. And we respectfully suggest that this not be passed in its present form.
Any questions, Mr. Fryer? And Carson?
Fryer, I understand your first concern about another level of bureaucracy. You spoke to that on the previous one as well. I think you make some good points, at least as far as I'm concerned, about the fee cost when you have a swimming pool, a restaurant, and a hotel. My concern is that I don't know when the last time we had a fee increase, but I suspect it was some time ago. I'm not even going to ask, but I would guess that the cost of the motel room has increased substantially, maybe not 35% in the last 7 or 8 years. But my question that I'm getting to is, do you believe that the motel restaurant operator ought to pay roughly the cost of the inspection, or should that be picked up by the restaurant?
Well, again, it depends on what the cost is, because if you just give somebody a blank check, you don't know what figure they're going to write in. Now, it frightens me when I hear statements that it costs $100 to collect a $10 bill, if that's the best efficiency.
The way I didn't understand.
Well, this was previous testimony.
Testimony that Bates indicated that on the license, to get a $10 license fee, then pay the Attorney General $100 on the average to collect a $10 license. I think you'll find that's not uncommon, and Senator Meeker would be glad to take the next hour explaining what some of the major problems of the Oregon State Bar.
Well, I'd use that as something that I heard this morning, but. When you say that you've come up with a fee that would support the system, well, you're in a circle there, and it's chasing. The system gets bigger, it gets grander, and this is, frankly, the direction that this thing is taking now. Where does it stop? The machine gets bigger, you have to put more fuel in it. And what we want done is to come up with something. Certainly, we want sanitary conditions, and we want our facilities checked on uniformly. The state law is uniform. The health department regulations are uniform. If the counties are not doing their jobs, I'm certain that there are legal means with which the local health officers can be encouraged to do their job. I don't see where this is going to help that. I would also be interested to know what the inspection figures were for the seven counties that that the health department has now. I don't know. I may be shooting myself down here, but are they hitting 100%? We've heard other counties that were only hitting 80% and so on. What about the seven counties that are currently under this jurisdiction?
Can we, could we ask Mr. Grayson?
No, we're not hitting 100% on the, in the 317 facilities. Matter of fact, it's costing us $62.50 average inspection, partly because of the time of this inspection. The fees, which you are, which are proposed to be amended here, were set in 1952.
About two?
What?
52. Corey, what percent are you getting in those counties?
Well, let's see, our counties in Wheeler, 90, Wallowa, 55.5, Morrow, 65, Lake, 70, Gilliam, 50, Grant, 45, Harney, 38. I'm not particularly proud of, but this is what we've gotten with.
That's the percentage of facilities that you're inspecting?
This is the percentage of restaurants in this particular case that's involved. These are the only ones where I have the full statewide percentages. We have some samples, just a couple of counties, such as the Black County.
How many restaurants are there in Harney County?
There are 29 restaurants. There should have been 58 inspections, there were 22. So they got hit a little less than once that year on the average. And Gilliam, there are 11.
Well, by that, you don't mean you're missing 62% of the restaurants in Harney County.
No, no, no.
They're all being inspected.
Yeah, they're all getting inspected once instead of twice. In Harney County, as a matter of fact, seven of them didn't get inspected at all that year. Our records in Portland would show which seven. I don't know.
It'd like to have been inspected every 13, 14, or 15 months rather than
possible, but the statute requires that they be inspected twice a year. And we haven't been able to make that on our present staffing situation.
Any further questions, Mr. Meyer? Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Mr. Robertson, do you want to testify on 317?
Very briefly.
Not discouraging you, I just couldn't tell the way to sign up here whether you did or not.
Right.
Mr. Wolfer, please.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Watson Robertson, attorney from Portland, and representing the Oregon Mobile Home Park Association, and I have Walter Wolfers here from Salem, who is a park owner and president of the association, and also kind of an organizer of our association in contacting members all over the state. I make that comment because he is familiar with parks other than his own and throughout the entire state. Senator Carson picked up a point in his questions that is the point I was going to make, and that is that our association feels that the mobile home parks have now matured in their residential character to the point where they're basically permanent residential parks rather than transient, and therefore they ought to be treated in that manner. They feel they're kind of looked as poor country cousins when they're inspected, as the Senate Bill 317 would require twice a year inspections, which is, by the way, a change from the permissive existing law, which says they may be inspected at whenever he thinks it's necessary. This new Senate Bill 317 would require twice annual inspections. Our association feels that twice annual inspections are not only unnecessary for the first class parks, which Mr. Wolfers and many members.
Well, let me interrupt.
Yes.
Try something out in Corey's case at that point. Corey, what if you had the language in there on inspection of the park as may rather than shall? And then you take the ones, I think you agree, there are those that do not need twice annual inspections, don't you?
I agree. Matter of fact,
there's some that don't need annual inspections, is that right?
I wouldn't go so far as to say they don't need annual. However, I have proposed, we have discussed an amendment with which I concur, if these gentlemen care to propose it, which would say that any mobile home park which has 2 years without violation would then be, the administrator could reduce the frequency of the inspection. I would anticipate reducing that to once a year. However, we don't, and I'm perfectly willing to go along with that proposal.
Well, I should have interrupted, but I just want to try this out and accept that point.
Yes. Well, We feel that the twice annual inspections are not necessary for many parks, that it would increase the cost of administering the inspection service and is therefore unnecessary. In other words, the existing law, it seems to me, is better. Just leave it May and he can operate as he may see fit. Another objection to Senate Bill 317 is that it increases the fees. Of course, we can get into a philosophical discussion of how much the state ought to finance the inspections of this type of facility. The third objection basically is that we feel that the present system of the local health officer and health district is satisfactory for present purposes, and that it isn't necessary to increase the state agency by shifting the supervisory control over the local health officers and districts to the state level. It, as Mr. Beyer indicated, for the motels, it does perpetuate a bureaucracy and increases the cost of state government, in our opinion, unnecessarily. Mr. Bateson was correct in saying that he has offered to work with us. However, when we got through working with him, we ended up with what he's proposing, and that is that Senate Bill 317 be adopted, and the only concession so far as 317 is concerned would be what he just stated, and that is that he would go along with an inspection device, which if a park satisfied the inspector for 2 years running, that would be 4 inspections, then at the pleasure of the administrator, they could skip annual inspections or the twice annual inspections. Well, of course, that's kind of a meaningless concession because all they have to do is find maybe a garbage can turned over or something and say, well, you haven't passed your inspection, therefore we're going to inspect you twice a year. So we
maybe
finally...
Maybe we could say substantial violation.
Well, maybe that would do it, Senator. But after we considered it in our total legislative committee of our association, it seemed like we were getting nothing out of that proposed change. Therefore, we abandoned it. We feel that we have a permanent residential type business, and it ought to be treated the same as private residences and apartment houses. We have submitted, through the courtesy of this committee, Senate Bill 836, which would, as Mr. Bateson indicated, would shift the control of the mobile home parks from the health department to the Department of Commerce. We not only, that bill is not directed solely to health inspections, but is directed to control of construction of parks. The present law provides for the construction of mobile home parks to be determined by health department regulations. And we feel that in line with our thinking that permanent residential housing is now the status of mobile home parks, that we ought to shift to the Department of Commerce, which will have the Uniform Building Code, we assume. They have the construction now of mobile homes. The units that go in the parks are now under the Director of Commerce. And we would, by that bill, put construction of parks into that department. In any event, we don't think that we need 317. We believe that the local health officers can do their job if they're forced to by whatever present laws are available to them. And Mr. Wolfers called to my attention RS 446072, which states an existing law that the State Board of Health shall make such surveys as are necessary to assure uniform enforcement of the health code. So they do have the means. I understand from our local health office in Multnomah County that there are ordinances of the city of Portland, there are ordinances of Multnomah County, and there are state regulations all on the subject of health and sanitation, so that this department isn't the sole means of achieving an end, at least in our county. And we think we ought to keep it on the local level. I brought Mr. Wolfers because he is kind of an expert, and we have other members of our association, all of whom have very first-class parks, I might say. And Mr. Orton, Ike Orton, who is seated in the second row back there, is a member of our association and is a developer of mobile home parks. And I believe he's designed and built some 96 of them or something like that. And so he's acquainted with some of these problems in a technical phase, if any of the committee has questions.
Maybe we can increase the fees to 100% and then the local government can afford to do these inspections.
Well,
Mr. Bateson says that's the primary problem, we can't afford it.
Well, Senator, I think if the inspector wasn't required to inspect the good parks like he would be under this bill, he'd have more money and time to inspect the bad ones that Mr. Bateson's complaining about.
Well, that's a problem.
In regards to a definition, we have worked with Mr. Bateson, and in the meantime, since we have, shall we say, broken off relations with him because of not being able to gain any additional points that amount too much to us, I finally located an FHA definition of a mobile home park as to what they go by. Now, I don't...
And this bill that we introduced?
No, the FHA definition is not. I just got this a couple of days ago. But it's a, I don't think it goes far enough, but it is a start in the right direction. And it's a parcel of land under a single ownership which has been planned and improved for the placement of mobile homes for non-transient use. Now, Mr. Bateson has showed us a series of pictures here, which as everyone knows, we can go out and find any type of housing, we'll get the same situation. You can pick it up anywhere. As much as I would like to say I wish no one in my industry did this, I'm not going to be foolish enough to say that it can't be. It will always be here, sorry to say. By the same token, I don't know of any way humanly possible for any inspector, no matter how much money you give him, unless he's going to be I don't know how to even say it, 100% dedicated to say, I'm going to clean up all the slums in the country, and I don't think it's possible. From this, I would like to go along and make the recommendation for anybody who's interested that we do go to a 90% occupancy of permanent-type mobile homes, not camping vehicles, non-transient, over 30 days, and work up a deal like this in regards to the permanent housing, even though we're going to have a few of those, even though I also don't like those, but we're going to have them. I honestly believe that this industry is now growing in stature to the point where it belongs under the Uniform Building Code, and this is my feelings on it. Thank you.
Senator Carson.
Well, are you aware of any illnesses or deaths? I should have asked Courtney. Illnesses or deaths, fires,
in this regard, I will speak for my own park, in which I have been in business for 14 years. I built it myself from scratch.
We had some help with the first year or two.
Pardon?
You had some help the first year or two, at least the ping pong room. Go on.
Okay, so I'm going to take you on. Anyhow.
The benefit of the committee, I used to play ping pong. Recreation room. I thought you wanted to know that. Go ahead.
You get that.
We'll still debate who can be who. But the point is in all these years, to the best of my knowledge, no one has ever become ill or what have you from this. By the same token, I have never had a blazing fire in my park. I will also state that, yes, I have been cited for certain violations. I think any man in business could be or would be. A few of them, I didn't have a door closer on the laundry room door. These types of things. Okay, I can't see where it's this great to waste a man's time to come out and check for this. These kinds of things over the years is sort of why I feel the way I do. But the fact that the local inspectors are governed by Mr. Bateson's department, and he has the right to come down and spot check any park in the state or his organization, from the state level, has the right to spot check and say, hey, why doesn't Marion County do this, or Gillum County, or anybody else?
up here on this, please, Stephanie.
A single comment I'd like to make. Much has been made about our authority over the local health officers and our right to spot check. It is true we could come and spot check, and we could say you should. But the health division has, well, the whole health organization has only a single authority over local health officers, contained in 431.410.20. The State Board of Health may remove a local health officer for intemperance, failure to collect vital statistics, to obey rules and regulations, to keep records, to make reports, or to obey orders of the health officer regarding the health of the people. The only alternative and the only power that exists is to fire the health officer. Now, that is not an effective means to get the infection done correctly in a practical sense.
Senator Peter. Mr. Bateson, I appreciate what you're trying to tell us here, but I also know what authority you can exert, for example, on the issue of septic permits in a county that I'm familiar with. I think you've done an outstanding job in bringing that county into line on issues of septic permits, much to the dismay of some of the people who live there. But you have done a fantastic job of taking care of that.
Senator, I'd like to take the credit for that. But the credit does not belong to the health division for that. The credit belongs to Dr. Reagan and his staff, who have wanted for years to do it right. And now that somebody up in Portland is also saying, yeah, we want you to do it right, they're now free to do what they want to do and what they are funded to do. We can't take the credit for the success in Yamhill County. That lies directly with the Yamhill County health officer and his staff, who are a top-notch bunch of people, and who are funded to do that work. But we can't say that the health division.
Can I ask, Mr. Bateson, Courtney, I've lost track of the rationale of why the health division ought to be inspecting mobile homes. I realize that's a basic, when you run, you know, that what state interest, health interest, public interest demands that we inspect mobile homes?
We have to go back to the, well, if you go right back to the raw basics of it, it's communicable disease control and general sanitation. Let's go back 100 years. The state moved into the business of controlling rooming houses, inns, hotels, and such things. Those became motels and hotels. Similarly, the state controlled restaurants for the sanitation of the health of the people. When mobile homes, house trailers, as they were called, first came in, they were very much in the nature of transient accommodations. There were no place to park them. There was no place to dump the sewage. So people began to build what were called mobile home parks. And some of them were the ones you saw there. Some of them were also like Mr. Wolfer's or like Surfwood or Sleepy Hollow out here. And because they were still transient in their nature, we moved into the trailer house business back in, what, 40? Before that, perhaps. Right, from the state standpoint. Then that industry began to change. Not all at once, not all to change, but it began to expand. Down here you still had the same basic place where you pulled in with your old trailer. But it began to expand, and now we're talking about the possible, about the desirability, which I agree you do and they do, of taking this part of this expansion and cutting it off. But I think it would be very wasteful to do what they proposed in 836, to go all the way back to zero and say, we don't care where you park your trailer park, or what you have to pay to have it parked there. We've got one case up in Clackamas County where the woman complained about the sanitary conditions of the trailer park and got a letter ordering her to move out. Not a thing we could do about it.
Thank you. Did the committee have, we didn't get any specific amendments on SB 321. There was the suggestion by the League of Oregon Cities, but they didn't get folios. Anybody want to move those amendments? 321. Is there a motion to adopt the amendment? All right, is there any other wishes by the committee with respect to SB 321? All right. We'll put that on for work Wish Senator Cook was here.
Is he coming?
I don't know. Maybe Dean Tivia.
I don't want him, she'd be running down.
Yeah, you were here. Can you get him up here? Senate Bill 508, he had proposed amendments. Did anybody else have amendments? I think they were different concepts.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to consider Section 2 changing that to a violation.
Violation?
I think it'd be fine, they won't go to jail.
Right.
They won't be disbarred.
Yeah, just a violation.
I mean, what, the...
Why don't we get a copy of the criminal code tonight?
4S-161.565.
Have you got the last declaration, Paul?
Well, I just put violation subsection 1 of Section 1 of this act is a violation. And we could go on pursuant to ORS-160, there's stated language that's on what they help us. We're trying to inform them, that's the effect of the...
Okay, you, Mr. Chairman, well, did you make that motion?
I'll move that we change it from a misdemeanor to a violation.
All right, is there discussion? Any?
No, not any.
Any discussion?
No, in favor.
All right. All those in favor, the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, now violation.
Mr. Chairman.
Any?
We discussed at one time the possibility of changing the concept of the bill in regards to whether it's a public body or a meeting room, public body's meeting in place. Any amendments, and do we happen to prepare any amendments to that respect?
I don't know if anybody has instructions to that, I can't recall. This was, any joint convening members of the public body?
Could I speak to that? My concern, Mr. Chairman, is the fact that we've spent the last 4 Monday nights working on a public hearing or open meeting bill. And trying to define meeting, which is the definition of Senate Bill 15, in public body.
What committee is that? That's in the joint...
Professional responsibility or something. Boy, that's a real quagmire, and we've, as I say, spent, I suppose, committee somewhere between 15 and 20 hours, 10 of them. Of course, that's probably the worst way to amend a bill is by attending a committee, but the simple little word meeting, but we all know what it means when we sit down, nobody knows what it means. Public body, we came up with the alliteration of the governing body of a public body. And the thought process, I don't want to harm the bill, I want the bill passed. And maybe this is substantial the way it is, but we, one alternative would be to put the prohibition on smoking onto the room and not onto the individual, into the, what goes on the room, which is...
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I say that is, for example, the planning commission of the Mount Angel, the city of Mount Angel, may meet at somebody's home, see, and kind of he's extended private dwelling. I would rather see it in the city hall. There's going to be a public meeting in this thing. We designate the room rather than the box.
Okay. When you do that, you run into another problem that we say a public room, then it means it could be in a restaurant, that's a public room. If you're talking about a government-owned facility, facility owned by the public, something like that. I wonder what we're excluding. Probably something we want to include.
Library.
No, you're including library, but that's a building owned by the public. Owned by a governmental unit, or any unit in the government?
affordability is? Oh, that is a meeting. Well, you got, but you still gonna have a meeting involved?
Well,
you still have a meeting, but only when it's held in a publicly owned.
Mr. Chairman, and I do this with some misgivings because I realize that we probably have a vote to pass it out as is, and I'm willing to do that. But I have tinkered with trying to get the same way. Hesitate to tamper with it because the fear of causing it to become more abundant right here in the front of it. Alternative is to approach it as we do with no hesitancy on the fire marshal. Having him prescribe how many people can, you know, the state of Oregon doesn't follow that, as we know in the labor committee, but everybody else has to. Unless you're at MacArthur Court or an athletic event and you're violated freely, but I mean, unfortunately. The concern I have is we do allow the fire marshal to prescribe how many people to get in the room for fire protection, and he can put that out. I was wondering if we might consider, at least, and maybe this is only starting at the state level, I'm not tinkering with cities and counties, but going to the state, in going after and allowing the fire marshal or somebody else not to restrict smoking as such. If there's a fire hazard, okay, no smoking. That's something like in the hotel or smoking bed. Second thing is air conditioning. I do not object to smoking if there is sufficient air circulation, but most of them in the capital are insufficient. So what I'm suggesting is we might want to, if we got the votes to pass this out, pass it out. But if we think that it's soft in a few areas, and I think it is soft in a few areas, we might want to restructure it so that we give the state fire marshal the authority, after judging the size of the room, circulation, the number of people in the room, that if it's determined to be unhelpful, he can publish post no smoking signs.
Would that be just, excuse me, like you're suggesting, related just to state buildings?
Well, see, my problem is that the way the local control is over me, and I'm just a little, concerned about all the state level legislation for water control districts. If they want to sit in a room and smoke cigars, that's really their business as long as I don't have. So I think maybe if we could do it first, probably, but we've not been able to do it for the legislature. We've failed in every attempt we've made to stop smoking in our room. And I'd be willing to start with a little small step to see if we can stop our colleagues.
I think Bill Stevens would try and help him in ways and means. Maybe that can be to your budget.
I haven't seen it, but
smoking may be damaging to your budget. He's got it up.
Well, that may be the approach. So that's the quandary I find myself in, Mr. Chairman. But maybe we ought to amend it.
That seems to me to be a sensible way. Like how people in municipal bodies over, which really aren't arms of state government, might tell them what they must do for all the issue of local control is involved. Now, if we're going to do anything on this level, I think it ought to be limited to public, or how would you describe it? The rooms in which meetings, hearings, etc. Meetings or hearings open to the general public In any state building, not just the state capitol, any state building, they prohibit smoking in any hearing room or meeting in which members of the public are invited. Now, the question comes, all the time or just while there is a meeting in progress? That's the question. Should it be all the time or just while there is a meeting in progress? Or 30 minutes before and 30 minutes after? Actually, in a sense, nobody's here but Dean, that Haverty has really terrible Dean. The other is
only under approval.
There's nobody here. Nothing like a reformed drunk. Now, don't you put that in that door there, I'll kill you. The barefoot boy, yeah.
Yeah, cook, I need to get a complaint in my house. They call my wife is ready to tell about that. I'm just amazed. Senator Byrd would introduce a bill. Why has he got his barefoot kid up there? If he's balling, they can big barrage so they finally get through it. He says, I'm sure that wasn't my husband. He didn't know anything about that. Well, I'll tell you what I'd be more inclined to do. Wally, Tony? I would be inclined to add at the end of line 9, I think period out, put it in buildings or rooms rented, leased, or owned by any of the government.
No, I don't want that.
State of Oregon.
Lone Rock.
While, unless, instead of saying at any meeting, in any public room, the intent being, is, no matter how large or small it is, if there's a room that members of the public or press are entitled to be, not the governor's private office, he can smoke if he wants to, but any place where it is a public, where the public is entitled to be, no matter of right. Where the room is owned by the state of Oregon.
Is that a motion?
I would move in substance, so you can work out.
Well, is this different than what I said, except that you substitute the state of Oregon rather than you?
Substitute the state of Oregon. And now I think we ought to decide this other question. Is there any reason at all why we shouldn't allow Dean to smoke anything?
I think it's a damn good reason. I don't know why everybody up here in this meeting would have to sit here and smell the smoke created by one person.
I sure don't like my nerve.
That's the question. Now, what do you think?
I answered it, I think.
What's that?
I think I'm going to step in between you two guys. You're wrong. Well, I think the two things we're talking about now is whether we want to prohibit one guy sitting in a public meeting room, or no, I guess it's the idea of whether or not there's members of the public invited. Now, when we pass Senate Bill 15, there are going to be very few meetings to which the public is not invited.
Let me just put it in there. I'm going to put my original motion.
Okay,
which is false, and let's get rid of it. I move that we add at the end of line 9, strike the period, and add the words in buildings or rooms rented, leased, or owned by any unit of the government. Period. Okay. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that your amendment be amended so that it will read. You're amending line 5?
No, line 9. I'm putting that at the end of line 9.
The
state of Oregon. Now, would that get it? I want
you mean
cover.
Is it owned by the state of Oregon?
The meeting means any joint convening of members of a public body to exercise or advise on the exercise of any power of government, and includes regular and special meetings, sessions, and hearings of any.
Why not just my language? In buildings or rooms rented, leased, are owned by the state of Oregon.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
By the state of Oregon.
Okay.
That's an amendment. Yeah. All right. Any discussion on the amendment?
Amendment to the amendment.
Amendment to the amendment.
Right. Would you accept my amendment?
Not unless I have to. You got four votes. We'll see.
You have four.
Huh?
I'm going to support Senator Cook's amendment.
All right. We'll find out. We'll take a vote then.
Oh, okay.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment to the amendment? All right, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. No. Okay. The amendment's adopted.
All right.
Now, we've already changed it to a violation in your absence, not a misdemeanor. All right. Is there any further discussion on Senate Bill 508?
All right, now, would you please read the definition again? Because I don't have it written down.
The definition?
Well,
what does it mean? Okay, we got to vote on the amendment, Jack. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I'd
okay.
like to see how it reads.
It reads now, at the end of line 9, you strike the period, and you put in buildings or rooms rented, leased, or owned by the state of Oregon. That's the present amendment that we're going to vote on.
Right.
Is there discussion on that amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meeker.
That would mean, in the intent of this, sub A then would mean any meeting such as this one that we're having now. Smoking would be prohibited. Now, it would not include, however, if four or five of us were just sitting in here discussing, let's say, the tax meeting.
Correct. I don't think so. Realistically, let's look at some practical about it. If you want to smoke a cigar, there's a few of us sitting around, who's going to object?
Okay. I'll get up and walk out.
All right. Okay. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we add a new Section 3 which will incorporate the emergency clause. All right. Now, Mr. Chairman, I want to speak for that. I don't think.
Is there any discussion of the proposed amendment?
I'd like to discuss it. As long as we're legislating, let's not just legislate for future sessions of the legislature. If it's so doggone good, let's have it now.
Is there any further discussion? All right, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Is that, Mr. Chairman, on Section 1, that the first line there, does that leave it up in the air of any public body? Or would that be changed?
Oh, yeah, that ought to, well, meeting of any public body, meeting means.
Yeah, but it has to be in a state.
Yeah,
state building or lease.
Yeah, if the local government wants to come into a state building, then they're going to have to come onto our ground.
That fair enough?
Right.
All right. Yeah. Is there any further amendments on this? Do I hear a motion?
Do we need any more amendments, Mr. Chairman? I move Senate Bill 508 as amended before due back.
You've heard the motion. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have a think to make sure that we cover it all. We've got several attorneys here. Look at it.
Are the attorneys any good?
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I'd like to do is I don't know that we'll ever be able to catch it perfect. But one thing I would like to do, even if we do pass it out, is make sure it's clear to the major sponsor for the bill before.
And if he objects, I'll talk to him this morning on the floor. If he objects to it,
let's bring it back.
All right? And then we'll take it down to legislative council and put the stuff in there and get it engrossed and get it out. Okay? Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
I've got to go carry a bill.
Stay here.
Senator Cook.
I'm Senator Cook.
Aye.
Senator Carson.
Aye.
Senator Meeker.
Aye.
Senator Meeker.
Senator Meeker. Senator Meeker.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
I move that the committee rules which govern the Committee on Local Government and Urban Affairs be amended to incorporate the intent of Senate Bill 508 at our next meeting.
All right, you heard the motion. Any discussion?
Can I sign it prepared?
Can I sign it prepared?
Yes, sir.
Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Senator Carson.
Aye.
Senator Dernstead.
Aye.
Senator Rieger.
Aye.
Senator Cabral.
Aye.
Mr. Hunsinger, no.
Where's Jesus? He go?
That's right down to the wire. That's the biggest thing that's going to happen all day.
What about my press conference on this?
Well, our purpose here is to swamp it.
We're about to turn 20 to 8.